Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, hearing a unique and captivating story today from Medal of Honor recipient George T. Joe Sakato. In June of 2000, Mr. Sakato was one of 20 Japanese Americans awarded the Medal of Honor for their actions more than a half century earlier. Only seven of them were still living at the time, and now none of them are. Mr. Sakato was the last one. He passed away earlier this month at the age of 94. When we left off, he was referencing the Lost Battalion, the 200-plus soldiers from the 141st Battalion, 36th Infantry, who were rescued by the go-for-broke soldiers of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, who would suffer more than 800 casualties in accomplishing that feat. Joe Sakato would be one of those casualties. It sounds daunting in retrospect, and it seemed a little daunting at the time.
See this one hill, 617. We look at that hill and it's how are we going to climb that hill?
I know you have some sketches of that hill that you put together. For people who aren't familiar with the Lost Battalion, as you refer to it, and this is the event that the 442nd Regimental Combat Team is most famous for, and I think exemplifies the courage of that unit. The Lost Battalion, these are the guys you referred to a moment ago as the Texas Battalion, primarily white soldiers who advanced beyond the lines and were surrounded by German forces. And you guys, the Japanese-American soldiers of the 442nd, were asked to go rescue them. Do you remember how you were told about that and what you understood your assignment to be?
We're on this side of the hill. We'll cross the railroad tracks and we get this order. They just pointed out that one hill, the 617. It's a big rocky ledge, cliffs. And then the rest of the mountain comes down, and we had to take that hill. And how are we going to get on top of that hill? He says, well, we go around it, but we have to chase the Germans off first. So we went on trucks, and we went behind the 7th Army and got on the back side of this hill. But we stayed on the west side of the hill down below, and it's half step at a time we marched towards this cliff area. And when we took us all night to get up so far, we got to the area. At dawn, we started our attack. Now we were behind the Germans. We surrounded the Germans, and the Germans had to get out of their foxholes and went east to the east side, and then they joined the troops that was fighting the 3rd Battalion that was going into the valley. And we finally got them down and around there. We jumped. Then artillery came in. The Germans sent artillery in, so we had to jump in the Germans' foxholes. And then we waited. And pretty soon the artillery stopped. There was going to be a counterattack. So the Germans called, radioed the troops that were fighting the 7th Army to come across. Now they came in the same area that we had come in. Now the Germans were behind us. We were being surrounded again. They were trying to chase us out of their own foxholes. And we got out so far. And then I told one of the fellows, watch out for the machine gun. So he looks up and he got shot. When he got shot, I crawled over and picked him up, and he died in my arms. And I says, "My God, I was going to get the SOB that shot him, or else die trying." So I picked up my Thompson and I crisscrossed up the hill. I went northeast one way, and then I fired. I had a Thompson submachine gun that I stole out of a Sherman tank that was crippled, and they were waiting for parts to fix it. But the troops that were from the tank were in the farmhouse talking to a farmer, and nobody was in the tank, so I crawled into the tank and pulled out the Thompson submachine gun and left my rifle. And then I was able to use it on this hill. When I fired it, it fired good straight up, and I says, oh, that's no good either. So I turned it on the side, and I started one left-hand side, and I, and it would automatically move to the right-hand side. That was real great. Mowed down a bunch of bushes, and next thing you know, I was going back and forth. When I go up to one, I fired it, and I turn it over again and run up the other way, and then I was throwing it again. The Germans that were from the 7th Army didn't know about this rocky ledge, and then when they finally got to the top of the rocky ledge, they couldn't see where they could go around it because the rest of the E Company was on the east side of it. They couldn't go there, so they dropped their rifles. I shot 6 of them, I know, but they said I shot 12 of them, and we captured 37 prisoners. They dropped their rifles because they couldn't get past that hill. Therefore, we came back, and we had to go to the left side hill. G Company moved over to the east end hills to chase the Germans off of the east hill down on the east side. And the 100th Battalion team came over and took over the hill 617, the east side of that hill, and then moved up towards the Lost Battalion. The I Company was catching hell because they were getting shot from one hill and the other hill crossfire. When they finally got it to the Lost Battalion, 150 men, only 7 of them, I Company was able to walk. K Company had 17 men. 100 Battalion had 20 men. We had 30. We was on the east side. We didn't get as bad as the others. I got wounded, and it was head back to the aid station. And I'm the only one there going towards the aid station, and the Germans send up a mortar shell, lands up about 10 feet away from me and picked me up and blew me closer to the aid station. Then I was 3 months in the Epinal Hospital, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. And then they finally got me on a plane and went to England, flew to England. Got to the hospital there, and then pretty soon I hear this, and it stopped. The soldiers in the hospital started ducking under the beds and tables and stuff like that. Get under the table, get under, what happened? Boom, buzz bomb. Went over our hospital, landed in Coventry. What else I have going to have to put up with?
Yeah, you've survived quite a bit by this time. Getting back to October 29th of 44 and this Lost Battalion. So in the end, you were able to rescue about 200 white soldiers, right?
Correct. I didn't help because I was wounded just the day before the final rescue was made. During these two battles, Hill 617 and the other hills, 800 of us were killed or wounded to rescue 281 men.
That's what I was getting at. You were part of the price that was paid to rescue those soldiers. So there were about 3 times as many casualties to the Japanese American soldiers than there were primarily Caucasian soldiers rescued.
That's correct. So I ended up in the hospital, and then I was 7th month I was in Vancouver, Washington hospital, and my kid, younger brother, he sends me a newspaper clipping from hometown of Redlands, California, that George Sicardo's classmate of 41 received his Distinguished Service Cross. And he sends me this clipping, and I looked, how does the hometown paper know about me getting the medal, and then I don't know anything about it?
You hadn't even heard about the medal yet.
No, I didn't hear anything about the medal yet. Day of my discharge, July of 31st of 1945, the medal came. And I says, for me to chase the Germans up the hills and capturing 31 of them and killing 12 of them. And I says, I didn't do all that. I'm not a hero. I didn't do all that. But I did shoot some, yeah. I helped capture 31. For that, they gave me this medal.
Well, and I want to talk to you more about that, but tell us the extent of your injuries, because you said you're already wounded when the mortar blast knocks you even closer to the aid station, so I'm assuming there's more damage done to you because of that. What were the extent of your wounds, and what was the hardest thing to get over for you?
Well, it was starting to snow, and I was getting ready to throw my overcoat away because it was getting too dang heavy. But it's snowing, and I says, oh, well, I guess I have to keep it this way. Packed it real tight between my bag pack, and it was at least a good 2 feet wide and 3 feet high, and I'm carrying this thing, and the artillery's coming, and boom, it knocked me down, and I was trying to dig, and I got my shovel out, and I'm pulling the, I can chop down and dig some of it, but I couldn't lift my, I could move my elbow on my left side, left arm, up and down, but couldn't the entire, from the shoulder down, I couldn't turn it. I couldn't lift it up. I couldn't understand what happened. So I ended up going towards the hospital, and I see this, my backpack, and I see this hole in my pack, and went through the overcoat all the way in. I took my jacket off. Oh, there's a hole there, too. Then I felt the trickle of blood going down my spine. I says, oh, I must be wounded. I told her around, showed the sergeant that. I said, nah, you're not a dig. Then he comes up a little closer and he looks at it. Oh, aid station's that way. So I turn around, go into the aid station, and I'm the only one there going that way. And this German, he set up a mortar, and it hits down right behind me, picks me up, puts me closer to the aid station. But he kind of nicked my pants leg and something else, and I was able to make it back to the aid station and to the hospitals.
And I know you've told your story quite a bit. And so as a result, it comes off as very matter of fact when you tell it. There's not, I don't hear a lot of your emotion, but I imagine at the time you weren't looking at it matter of fact. I mean, what was that like for you, and how scary was it? How crushing was it? How did you keep going? How did you get through all of that?
I couldn't understand why all this artillery coming in and the explosion. You see one guy and next thing he's not there. Another time he come in, they're all medics. One shell comes in and hits tree burst, and this shrapnel comes flying down. One shell can knock three guys out or get wounded, three guys. I thought, well, when I pick myself up and I get blown up with this mortar shell, and I thought, my God, what's next? But I finally got to the aid station and got to the hospital.
And I imagine you were in the hospital when you heard about the rescue of the Lost Battalion. And yes. What did that mean to you when you realized how big of a price was paid for that and that you were part of that price?
We lost a lot of men just to rescue 231 men. And then I says, oh, I'm glad I was able to make it to the hospital. I felt bad for those guys that got killed or wounded. All this being shot at right next to me. Three of them went right there, and the other one got artillery's blew us up, and he passed away. He was the first, and all the three others, and then I was heading. We had to go take another hill, and as I was walking forward, one ridge. Well, the sergeant said something to me, and I was going to take a step forward, but I stopped and turned to my right and see what the sergeant was saying, and a pow, pap, something passed my left ear and hit the tree that I was standing next to. A German sniper was shooting at me. If I took my step forward, I would have got shot in my right side, right temple. But it just, as I turned around, luckily a bullet hit the tree instead of me, so I had to duck and look for the sniper.
That's one of many times that you can look back on and say, it could have been you. Why do you think it wasn't you? When people ask you that, why did you survive? How are you still here? And if you hadn't survived, your daughter's sitting right here with us. She would have never been born. When you look back on all of that, how do you add it up? Why do you think you made it through?
Being short kind of helped. The rifleman, when he picks up his rifle, he has to aim at it. The rifle's a little higher than 5'4", and the bullets go right over my head. Instead of pointing down, he would have shot me. I was short enough to say he couldn't hit me. But those guys with 5'8", they got shot. I'm 5'4". Me and John Cassano, he was barely 5'2". He survived. He made it back.
It's time to take another break on Hometown Heroes and this look back at the story of Joe Saccato, who passed away earlier this month at the age of 94. When we come back, we'll hear the story of how and when he received the Medal of Honor. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's RV Country within driving distance of this radio station. But really, it doesn't matter where you live, because Paul Everett has a fly and buy program that will fly you to any of his locations to buy your new RV. It's one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Serving RVers for 55 years, you'll find Paul Everett's RV Country throughout the West and online at rvcountry.com. www.bankofamerica.com. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Effler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting rvcountry.com.